You're watching Notepad with me, Ibrahim Sani, with my colleague Narozman. We're here having a conversation with the group CEO of Post Malaysia, Charles Brewer. He has just crossed the one-year threshold, being appointed to the position on August 1st last year. Charles, thanks for taking the time to come over to our humble abode. Perhaps let's do a quick rundown on the past 12 months of running this organisation. It's a well-beloved organisation. Everybody knows Post Malaysia. Everybody has some form of interaction, some shape and form over the past few years. But yeah, talk to us through that whole idea of you settling down.
Sure. First and foremost, thanks very much for having me. I appreciate it. Even though I recently learned you're a Chelsea fan.
Don't worry. It's only three games. Okay. Enjoy your time at the
summit. I'm enjoying my time at the top of the league. Anyway, yeah, so it's been a really... I mean, like everything in life, you have the flip and the positive and negative. Yeah, so a long 12 months. Yeah, so I didn't have these grey hairs before. I was a little bit slimmer. I was a bit healthier. So it's been a very long 12 months, but also an incredibly enjoyable 12 months with a lot of twists and turns, a lot of challenges, and culminating, as you know, in our Q2 results, which I'm very proud of. I think the team has done an outstanding job.
Yeah. Was it hard?
Very.
What was the peak in that? Because you do have the experiences in the HL many more. Yeah, how was it?
So I think, you know, the couple of points, certainly for your viewers, you know, postal transformation is not unique to Post Malaysia. Every post office in the world is going through some level of transformation and some level of turnaround. So that wasn't a surprise. I guess some of the surprises I walked into back in August last year was the levels we were at, particularly in our sort of core service. If you think about going to a restaurant, the most important thing is the meal, not the maitre d' or the signage or the lights or the aircon. It's the meal. For us, it's about delivery, you know, that's the most important piece. So I was a little bit surprised at how far that had gone off track in some respects, but equally, and what's really, really pleasing, equally pleased at how fast we course corrected that and the operations team course corrected that to get it back on track. So to answer your question, pretty tough. A lot of learnings, a lot of incredible effort by, you know, 20,000 employees. Still lots to do, I hasten to add, still lots to do, but overall pretty good.
So how do you see the new approach since the pandemic? You quit DHL, you quit before the pandemic, right? So, and then you were selected for Post Malaysia during 2021, during the endemic phase. So how's the trend? From the 30 years experience to Post Malaysia after pandemic, how do you see new approach or to the business, doing business for Post Malaysia?
Well, I think COVID, by the way, thank goodness we're sort of somewhat the other side of it, not fully, but somewhat the other side of it. Has had a dramatic impact on the logistics industry per se, which Post is part of. So it's had a huge change. And just to sort of, again, articulate that or simplistic form, you go from doing X volume to 3X that volume literally overnight as a result of retail shutting down. So massive, massive change. Massive change in terms of, and again, for those who are perhaps not so close to it, changes in how we operate. Physical distancing wasn't around before, so trying to move and sort parcels and letters when you have those sort of requirements make life a lot tougher. So it really had a huge impact on the logistics sector, and Post Malaysia being no different. That said, you know, now we're sort of somewhat the other side, and through Q4 with the MCO being lifted, we're seeing a rush of people running back to retail. So the volumes are definitely softer. The market is softer than it was, say, 12 months ago. We reckon around 30 to 35% less online shopping than they were. I won't ask whether you do or whether you do, but the market is definitely somewhat softer. So that in itself creates, so we had the complications of increased volume. Now we have the complications of slightly lower volumes that create challenges, hence why we said, and quite rightly so, in our recent announcement.
I don't know. Even in my household, my daughter continues. I have a 15-year-old daughter. She gets allowance and she spends all of it online. But I have practically stop shopping online unless that's a particular item that I think is, I guess, it's very hard for me to source around. So the consumer behavior has changed remarkably to a point where some consumers continue to shop online, the other consumers are returning back to how we were before.
Absolutely.
What's the impact on the business considering that the change of consumer?
Absolutely. And Ibrahim, you're 100% correct. So we estimate that the total Malaysian market is something like 75 million parcels a month, something like that, around that number. And we think that's dropped about 25 to 35% for exactly the reasons that you just mentioned. People are either going back to retail, and I was in KLCC just this weekend.
Yeah.
It's full, so it's either going back to the retail sector itself or not shopping as much. I think there is a general level of concern in the consumer around the economy, both globally and in Malaysia. So I think people are sort of keeping their money in their pocket a little bit. Perhaps that articulates for yourself. So there's certainly
I'm keeping my own money. My daughter speaks differently.
I would like to keep my own money and my wife's, but it doesn't necessarily change that.
But
I think there is a level of sort of concern and worry around what happens with the economy, which means people aren't shopping quite as much as they were. And there's a third impact, which is, again, when we talk about sort of the challenging environment we operate in. So the two big platforms are operating here in Malaysia. So of that 75 million, about 50% of it is either Shopee or Lazada. They're increasingly growing their own logistics infrastructure. So with lesser volumes, they can put more volumes into their own infrastructure, which also creates challenges for people like Post Malaysia. So like I said earlier, great second quarter results. I'm really, really pleased with them. Still lots to do in terms of our transformation, and we still operate in a very challenging environment.
So Post Malaysia spelled out a three-phase transformation strategy, which is phase one is back to black, phase two is transform the core, phase three and post 2.0.
Yes.
So where is Post Malaysia now, and what does transform the core entail?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, I mean, like I mentioned, when I first came in August last year, I spent a huge amount of time either with our employees in the field or with our customers and listening to what they were saying. And it was quite clear that there were a number of areas that were broken. The house wasn't particularly, the foundation of the house wasn't as robust as it needs to be in logistics. And again, like I said earlier, just take the basic core purpose of what we do, which is pick up and deliver. That wasn't where it needed to be. So the first phase was, let's get the foundation right. Let's get the foundation right so that customers, for the most part, and we do 1 million+ letters a day and 250,000 parcels a day, so we're always going to get one or two that don't quite go right. I fully appreciate that. But let's get the foundation right so we have a competitive product. So primary goal number one was get that foundation sorted. That was phase one, all around back to black, all around fixing the basics. And very, very pleased to say that, again, on the back of a lot of hard work by a lot of people, our service number now is the best in Malaysia. If you're sending parcels in Malaysia, the best delivery providers Post Malaysia, Post Laju, simple as that. So that, and they've worked really hard to do that. And that's just chips to get in the game. We pick up and we deliver as promised. Yeah, so that's going really, really well. To the second point, and as mentioned in our Q2 results, we made a profit for the first time in 15 quarters. Again, I want to stress again, as I say in England, one sunny day doesn't make a summer. So we still have a lot to do. But that was the purpose, get back into the black, get to be in a sustainable
position. Or at least inspire your people. Right?
Absolutely. And I think when you're going through a huge transformation, which Post Malaysia is, by the way, and again, not alone in that space, there's always a certain amount of cynicism from below or around or above around, okay, I like the story, I like the narrative, I like the playbook, I like the strategy, but can you deliver? Excuse the pun.
Yeah.
And I think Q2 gives credibility, builds trust for our employees, builds trust for the board, builds trust for the unions, builds trust for everybody. So I think it's a milestone improvement. I'm really super proud of everything the team have done, but still much, much to do. And to your point, now we're focusing on transform the core. Transform the core is about doing it without grunt work. So, you know, getting our service from where it was to now 95% next day delivery. Mm-hmm. A lot of that is chasing, charging, exciting, motivating, celebrating, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now we need to inject the automation to ensure we can do it where we don't have to think about it so much. And many others. So again, I know your love is digital. So we're working very, very hard on our customer experience, the customer journey. So when you come into a retail point through to sending a parcel, is it paper? Is it manual? Is it digital? How easy is it to do business? So that's all the transform the core is really about, then taking us to a leading logistics provider in Malaysia. And then the third phase is thinking about who we want to be tomorrow, which will make my hair grow even grayer.
But there's a lot more to unpack there, but for now we'll go for a short break. When we come back, we'll discuss a little bit more with Post Malaysia. Thanks for staying on with us. We have with us Charles Brewer, the Group CEO of Post Malaysia. Charles, let's talk about before we went to the break, you were talking about the man management, I suppose, or the person management, pardon me, on your organization. And of course, now you're focusing on the automation. There was a time in our lives where we forgot that digitization also requires a lot of brick and mortar activities.
Yep.
These days, a lot more people are fully familiar with it. Your competitors are also evangelizing the whole notion of there's a lot of brick mortar element in terms of digitization. But because of this, there's a lot of elements of CAPEX injection, including the hardware and software of things. Where do you see capital allocation is needed when it comes to improving that part of the business in post-Malaysia?
Yeah, so, and again, I think your question is spot on. So first and foremost, and having been in logistics for more than 35 years, whether we like it or dislike it, it's a people business. Yeah, so still today, a human delivers the letter, delivers the parcel. So, and we talk about this in post-Malaysia a lot about delivering the smile in the last mile, and to date, robots haven't been able to do that. Now it will change. I mean, drones and autonomous vehicles and AMRs, all of this sort of commercialized robotics are going to come into the business more and more. But for the time being, and even then, I suspect it will be a very much a people business. But to your question, I think there's probably three areas where we're spending a lot of our time on. One is robotics. So if you look at, for example, we have two main hubs in Malaysia, one out at the KLIA and one in Shah Alam. One does 250,000 parcels a night, the other does 150,000 parcels a night. That still has about 800 people in it. And that's fine, that's what it takes to sort that volume. But there is a lot of automation, commercially and scalable automation that's available today that can operate the packages moving through that source center in a more cost-effective way and a safer way. I think that's really important. Most people don't necessarily look at the angle of safety, but if you think about one of those hubs, we have anything like up to 40 tugs operating, forklift tugs operating through those locations. They move around at speed. Okay. I would come through it carefully if you come through, but those can operate in as robotic AMRs, which are much, much safer. So that would be one area where we're focused on how do we automate our operation to take complexity, take cost, and create an incremental safety in the environment. That's one. Second one is a really exciting one for us is our ESG roadmap. So we are, like many companies, working very, very hard around how we become a better global player so that we have a lesser footprint in terms of emissions. We have a commitment to be net zero by 2040. We have something like 10,000 vehicles across Malaysia. At the moment, they're all ICE vehicles, which means they're,
gasoline.
Yeah, correct, gasoline. And the world is changing very, very fast.
So hang on. Are you indicating that you're moving to EVs?
We are moving to EVs as we speak. So still early days, still early days. I'll come back on the show and tell you a lot more about that another time.
Let's talk about it now.
So as part of our let's get to net zero in 2040, we're focused on five key areas that will, to your point, which will take CapEx, will take looking at modernization. So fleet is one. So there are now two-wheel and four-wheel EVs in Malaysia, which are a great opportunity for us. So stay tuned for an announcement coming up on that. Second one is using things like telematics in a more efficient way than we do today. So telematics simplistically means we operate our fleet more efficiently. So idling, if you sit at the traffic lights with your engine idling, you're chucking out CO2. So telematics will tell us when our vehicles are idling or not driving optimally.
I don't think your drivers are going to be happy about it.
No, it's okay. I mean, and for the most part, you know as well as I do, I think most people, and COVID has changed that too, most people want to see a better purpose from their organisation. So certainly in the discussions we've had so far, people are really super excited by it. So fleet, telematics, which is how we orchestrate the fleet. Third one is our buildings. So we have a lot of buildings across Malaysia. So using things like building BEMS, which is automation, that switch lights on, switch lights off, switch aircon on, switch aircon off. Okay. So manage your energy efficiency very carefully. Waste, we have something like, I can't remember the number, huge numbers of reams of paper that we destroy every year and use every year, so we want to stop that. So we've just started removing printers from all our facilities. And that also leads us back to digitalization of our journey. The more you digitalize, the less paper you need, and many, many more things besides. So I think to answer your question, we have a fairly clear roadmap of where we want to spend. All of it is aimed at either creating a greater place for our people to work, that's really important, a safer place for our people to work, either that or driving service capability, so improving the service that we offer to you, either on our retail counters or through delivery, or delighting our customers, making our customers even happier, or improving our profit. Those four areas, we focus on those four pillars.
It's unbelievable that you're hitting all the ESG markers while trying to achieve operational efficiency.
I think it's you know, again, historically it was almost either or, you know, so because of the cost of batteries.
But this is the way you have elucidated it. It's not just lip service. You're actually doing cost savings and ESG at the same time.
No greenwashing coming from us. And we made that point very clear that when we come out and announce, we will do. So, yeah, you've got to commit to it.
Definitely, it's good to see that Post Malaysia is recovering from the pandemic. So, along the way, there's definitely our challenges. So, what are the challenges you are facing? We go down deep in terms of what are the challenges in the economy environment? What are the challenges in the industry landscape? And what even the challenges in the regulatory challenges and even other headwinds?
Yeah, it's a good question. And like I said, and I want to make sure that if nothing else, people remember this. We've had a fantastic first half of the year. Improved significantly year on year, 83% improvement in our results. We've done so much already, which I'm, like I said, a number of times, very, very proud of. But the rest of the year and going forward is still very, very challenging. And to your question, there are really three reasons why it's still a very challenging environment. You have, number one, the market is softer for all the reasons we just discussed, whether they're spending on. I was told yesterday that one of the reasons why people are spending less is because the borders are open, people are traveling again. I think that's probably fair. So people have choice where to spend their dollars, whether it be online, in the retail shop, with travel, education, or anything else. So it is a softer market. That's number one. Number two is, and to your question, it is a very competitive environment, a really competitive. I get asked all the time, how come through COVID, Post Malaysia didn't make money? And it's really, really simple. And again, it's a good opportunity to talk about it, is that not every parcel that you receive is a good parcel. Yeah, so if you don't have a parcel that's sold at a price that's greater than your cost of delivery, you make a loss. It's simple as that.
But because of the duty, you have to do it.
Well, yeah, we have a USO, a service obligation, which is great, by the way, and we should leverage that. But the reality is, and again, to answer the question I get asked very often by people in the field on Facebook and many other places, it's not always about just volume and bigger being better. So it is a very competitive environment.
And quality, again, we're talking about quality.
Yeah, quality.
Right?
And you know, to give you a couple of examples. So in Malaysia, we have 122 courier licenses. So we have 122 courier licenses for about 33 million people, yeah? Which is a lot, yeah? To give you a parallel, in Thailand, which is double our population, they have about 40 courier licenses.
Wow.
Indonesia, I think, have 42. Mm. You know, and that in its, I mean, and again,
so courier licenses per capita were really
high, really. Yeah. And it's so easy for people to wander into Malaysia and set up a courier business. And so what we've seen over the last 2 or 3 years, particularly and specifically, is a lot of foreign entrants coming in.
Good for us, right? The consumers.
It's a good question. You know, I get asked very often, is competition good? And look, bulk standard answer, of course it is. Competition is good for the consumer, good for us. It keeps us on our toes. But that competition is only good if it's somewhat regulated. And what I mean by that is, you know, what we saw over the last couple of years is that competition playing perhaps in a different way. One is, you know, if they're using PE funds to drive and therefore drop the price.
So they don't care cost, yeah.
Yeah, they don't have the same...
They undercut everybody.
They don't have the same rules of the game as perhaps myself and many of the other AMEC members in Malaysia. But again, you could argue, well, tough luck, Charles, that's just life.
Yeah.
But I think the flip side of it is, and we've seen this happening, one is drivers being put at risk. So, you know, if they cut the delivery cost, which happened, cut the delivery cost or delivery payment they're going to make to their drivers by 20 or 30%. That means a delivery driver has to work 20 or 30% more. That's putting them at risk, and I think that's wrong. That's really bad for the market. It's really bad for the employee. That's number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, you saw it through Raya. If your daughter shopped during Raya...
She shops every time, but yes.
She will have seen that the service collapsed in Malaysia through Raya.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because volumes went through the roof.
Yep.
And they're not investing in capacity. Mm. So we've seen it 2 or 3 times over the last 2 years where the service has really gone through the floor. So that's not good for the consumer. So to answer the question, is competition healthy? Not if that happens either. And the third one, which I think is, you know, equally concerning, is when we saw that happen a couple of times when, you know, they don't have the same rules of the game and they're offering predatory pricing in the market. It puts thousands and thousands and thousands of jobs at risk. In the interest of taking share. And the question you always have to ask yourself is, if they kill 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 of the bigger players, what happens to the price after that? You know, so to answer your question, is it good? It depends. I think it depends on how the rules of the game are played. And I think there is an opportunity for us in Malaysia to be a little bit more careful around how operators operate in Malaysia in the interest of the employees, in the interest of the consumer, in the interest of service, and in the interest of the industry. I think it's a good thing to.
So a company like yours is asset heavy. If you look at the balance sheet, there's nothing much else to focus on but the asset. Yeah. And of course, this does take an impact on your income statement as well. How do you look at the desired balance sheet moving forward? Reducing asset, reducing headcount? What does it look like?
Liz, it's a great question. So I'll give you a great example of that. Just to touch on the way that you can view it. You can view it in two different ways. You can view it about how do we reduce the cost, and certainly over the last 12 months there was a lot of low-hanging cost opportunities within our business, and still more as we look forward. So we've definitely be lowering the cost of production, and that's really important. I think any logistics company would do that, you know, continually focus on how do you lower that cost of production.
Every bit counts.
But sweeping changes in the interest of short-term P&L gains, I don't think is a particularly healthy strategy. But anyway, to the point, let me give you one example. We sit on around about 650 retail points. So, you know, the post-Malaysia retail points, I'm sure you've been to Dai, Bumi or wherever else, which are very great, by the way. So we sit on about 650 of those, and that's about 3.2 million square foot of retail space. Yeah, now, you can look at that two ways, and it's not particularly healthy from a cost perspective right now, from a pure P&L perspective, because footfall's reducing as people do things online, mail is reducing, et cetera, et cetera. So it has its challenges. But again, you can look at it in two ways. You can look at it, okay, well, look, how do I reduce that footprint? But to your point earlier on, we have a responsibility to connect Malaysians. And that's really, really important in terms of our purpose. It's all about how do we connect Malaysians domestically and internationally. So the different way to look at that is say, well, that's 3.2 million square foot retail space. It's probably the biggest retail space of any retailer in Malaysia.
Yeah.
And we leverage that. We should leverage that and leverage it through offering alternate and different products.
So what are you thinking about?
Working very hard on it as we speak. But there is literally the sky is the limit in terms of what potentially you could offer through those retail points. So a lot more work to be done on that. But it's certain, and that's just one example, by the way. There are many other margin-led businesses we're working on that de-risk the reliance on domestic, de-risk the reliance on the sort of current business, and create S-curve opportunities. So retail is definitely one, international is another, e-commerce fulfillment is another. So we're working on three or four other areas that start to create these S-curve opportunities. And it's still early days. And as I said earlier, we're focused today on transforming the core, but at the same time, in parallel, running a number of
Does this mean that look, from an investor perspective, you have turned your P&L, plans are in store, it looks like it's going to be capex heavy. Is fundraising in the air right now?
Not at the moment. Again, I get asked very often, does a taxpayer pay? We don't. It's a privatized company, etc.
Yeah.
Publicly listed. So at the moment, no, we have cash flow to operate those projects we talked about. So no immediate need for cash now.
So congratulations on the second quarter on increasing, but also we have to like acknowledge many have seen posts, it's like losing the battle in the courier industry. So basically this is not the end, definitely, with all the initiative you are doing right now with ESG, definitely. So what are your strategy moving forward despite taking into consideration of the stiff competition?
Yeah, and like I mentioned earlier, Nina, it is a really competitive space, no question about that. But like I said, I'm okay with that. Competition is good. It keeps us on our toes, makes sure we drive forward. So to answer your question, simplistically, two things. One is service. You know, in the parcel business, just talking about the parcel business, in the parcel sector, he or she who delivers first generally wins, yeah? Mm. With all the right attributes, you know, track and trace, customer experience, digitalization. So generally speaking, if your service is the best in the market, which Post Malaysia is, as we sit here today at 95% next day delivery, which is fantastic. Generally speaking, in any normal market, that wins the day. And we're seeing gains in market share. That's really positive. We're seeing gains in the customer segments that we are very interested in. That's back to the question earlier.
That's a clear projection.
Yeah, it's definitely heading in the right direction. I would, again, coming back to the challenges, one of the challenges around, you know, like I said, in a normal market, service would win the day. But there is one additional complication here, which is, as I'm, you know, again, if you shop online, you would know, when you shop online on the platforms, you don't get to choose who your courier is. It's masked. It's called masking in a business. So the choice of carrier is masked. So the consumer in Malaysia, and you know, the 33 million people or your daughter doesn't get to choose post-Malaysia, which is very sad, I think. I think they should be able to choose. The consumer should be able to decide who they buy from and how, which carrier is delivering it, based on the service parameters, based on likes, loves, whatever else. And that creates an additional challenge. I'm not looking for any tissues or tears. Mm-hmm. We have a very competitive, challenging environment. Our strategy to answer your question is make sure we provide the very, very best service.
Yes.
I wish you all the best, and I wish the entire family of Post Malaysia, 20,000, was it?
20,000, yeah.
Mm. Fantastic.
Thank you.
It's a big business. It's an old business. It's a very familiar business, and I don't see anybody hating that business. I mean, I really like my postman.
There's a lot of love for Post Malaysia.
That was Charles Brewer, the Group CEO of Post Malaysia. If you want to learn more about their business and what they do, in case you don't know what Post Malaysia does, just go on to astro1u.com, look for more resources such as this over there. Signing off on behalf of Nina Rosman and me, Ibrahim Sani. Catch you in the next one.